All right, welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about what content medium to go with. Is it better to start a blog or a podcast or a YouTube channel? And between Tony and I, we've done all three, and that's what we're going to be talking about today.
I love this topic because I've seen, I don't know if you've seen this lately, but I've seen a lot of articles saying that blogging is dead, and I don't agree with that.
I completely don't agree with that. In fact, I chuckle whenever I see that because that means less bloggers to compete against.
I'm like, yay, less competition. Perfect. But I think it is important to talk about the three different mediums and how you can use them. And what if you're just starting out, I think it's important to start with one. We talk about this a lot when you're getting started. Which one do you start with? You might end up doing all three. I mean, you're doing all three currently, but you didn't start with all three. And so I think that's important to talk about as well.
Oh, I would definitely not start with more than one,
right?
Because it's quite overwhelming. But in the end, once you have one working just great, then you can kind of leverage the content across all the channels, and it works out well that way.
Absolutely. So let's get started with the first. If you're just getting started, you don't know what to do, I think the first thing you need to do is think about what you want to create content about, because that actually will help you decide which method you should start with. So people call it like finding your niche or discovering your topic. And I think for most people, they kind of already know what they want to start talking about.
I think if it's in the DIY space or anything that's demonstrable, then video is probably by far the way to go, right?
Absolutely. I think DIY, I did a little research on this. There's actually a couple DIY podcasts, but I think to be able to like start with a podcast, you might have to be famous already, right? Have some sort of cred in the space just to talk, because talking about DIY doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I was about to say, have you listened to one of those episodes before?
I've not listened to them, but I saw that they were there. I was kind of afraid to, because I thought, well, if I don't like them, then that won't be good. But I agree with you though. I also think, I actually read this too, like if you wanted to do something funny, if you were like sort of a comedian type of thing, you could do YouTube or a podcast, but writing might not convey the same way, right? Because a lot of comedy is timing. Unless you're an excellent writer and you have like a writing background, something in that niche might be better suited for either YouTube or podcast.
You know, on the other hand though, I've read some blogs that are just hilarious too. So it just really depends on what your abilities are, really.
Yeah. And if you want to talk about making money online,
yes,
you could do one of the three, right? I mean,
you can do all three. In fact, which is what I do. You just have to make sure that you're making money first before you start talking about that stuff.
That's right. But I do think that it's important, if you know what your topic is, that you do a little research, right? So maybe you are like crazy great DIYer, but there's not a lot of competition in the podcast space. Maybe it does make sense for you to, if you can figure out a way to do that effectively, maybe a podcast is perfect because you won't have any competition, right? So I think it's important to do some research and figure out where your audience is, where they're spending time, and where there's an opportunity for yourself in regards to which one to get started on.
I mean, there's other factors too. Like you mentioned before, like if you're already famous, then I would say a podcast is probably a must have,
yeah,
regardless of what topic you're in, because it builds much deeper relationships. Because people, when they listen to a podcast, they listen to it for a long time. Like,
yeah,
my podcasts are around 45 minutes. Our podcasts are around 45 minutes. If you're willing to listen to someone for that long, then chances are you're a fan.
Well, and I also think what's great about podcasting over the other two is that it's a great way to meet people. Because I know for you, you've used your podcast to meet people and have them on your podcast. And it's for you, it's caused you to be introduced to lots of people in the online business space and other spaces that you're interested in learning more about. And the podcast is a great introduction method to get to know those people. Whereas if you just reached out to them and you didn't really have anything, it might be weird or stalkery. I don't know.
It's sad, but I think the podcast is actually my social life. Is that sad?
I don't know. That's how you make friends.
It is. I mean, like, it's one thing to meet someone at a conference or something, but if you, by the time you have an hour long conversation, just one on one, you really get to know that person. And that's how I've made a number of friends. Actually, isn't that how we became friends?
It is, because I did your podcast. Absolutely.
Exactly. And we talked for like an hour and maybe like an extra half hour afterwards.
Yeah. And I think it's an easy way to get guests, right? Like, if you want to have someone on your blog, they have to actually write content. And asking someone to write an article or something like that is actually pretty daunting. And the same thing with YouTube. It's like, hey, do you want to come on my YouTube channel? Which means either we're live broadcasting together in separate locations, or maybe you have to be close to each other. So it's more awkward. Whereas a podcast, it's pretty easy. Hey, you got a mic? I got a mic. Let's go.
Yeah, video must be really awkward because you probably have to fly over there, right? And do a collab in person. And then I actually get these pitches still. This was all the rage back in the day with blogging, where you do an interview.
Yeah.
And you say, hey, I'd like to feature you on my blog and interview you. And you're like, oh, great. And then you get sent a list of questions. And then before you know it, it ends up being like this 2,000-word blog post.
It's funny because I used to get those too, and it was like, sure, I'll answer a couple questions, and then it's like 32 questions. They're all open-ended, philosophical. It's not like, how old are you? What's your name? Where do you live? It's these long, and then at the end of it, you're like, I could have written 3 blog articles in the time that it took me to fill out the interview request.
Exactly. I mean, this was all the rage in the beginning, and then I think people caught on to the tactic because it was like free content.
Well, although, you know, it was also the tactic too, totally off topic, is they would do that to write books. They would interview people and then they'd put, you'd be like a chapter in the book. Actually, I think you're in a book like that, aren't you?
I am, actually. Yeah, so I felt, are you telling me I fell for it?
Well, I did it too. That's why I'm guilty as well. Because when I moved, I was going through books on my bookshelf and I was like, what the heck? Why do I have this book? And then I realized, I was like, oh, I'm in it. The author like sent me a copy because I was, you know, was one of those 2,000 word interviews. And
I want to say like Tim Ferriss's last two books were like that, right? They're all based on his podcast interviews.
But I mean, if you want to write a book, it's an excellent, it's an excellent technique. But anyway, I think the first thing is figure out what you want to talk about and then figure out what medium you think is best for the business that you're just starting. The second thing to consider, and we talked about this on our last podcast about how much money it takes to invest, but there's definitely like a blog is basically free. You're not going to spend more than, I think we decided it was $10 total.
I think it would, didn't we just, like you could literally do it for $3.
Right. $3 a month.
$3 a month.
Yeah. Whereas if you're going to do YouTube or you're going to do a podcast, there is an initial financial investment. Both you and I feel like it's pretty reasonable. We talked about really getting started for about under $75 when you talk about a microphone and possibly like a mic that attaches to your cell phone if you're doing a YouTube channel. But really, $75 to start a business is dirt cheap.
I mean, I think for a YouTube channel, I mean, everyone has a phone these days.
Yeah.
And I've actually seen channels go popular just based on the phone and like a really cheap set of microphones that just plug into the phone mic, the mic jack, basically.
Yeah. But I think what makes it cool about all these ways to build an audience is that they're all super inexpensive. But if you're like super tight on money, then the website is definitely the absolute cheapest way to go. You will have to spend a little bit of money to start a podcast or a YouTube channel.
Yeah, you know, even if it was more expensive, I would say having your website, it's always the way to go, regardless of which one that you have.
And then the other thing that we talk about is the time factor, because these are not created equal when it comes to time. And a lot of that, though, depends on, okay, so like with this podcast that you and I are doing, it's really not edited at all. Like everything that we say shows up on the podcast. We're not doing a lot of cleaning up or cutting out the dumb stuff we say. It's all going to go in there for you guys because we think that's important. But a lot of people don't do that with their podcasts. They're heavily edited, which takes a lot of time to go through and listen. If you're recording a 45-minute podcast and you're going through and editing it, it's at least another 45 minutes of editing, if not more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, like Joe Rogan, he doesn't edit any of his podcasts really. Whatever goes, goes. And that just saves a lot of time.
Yeah. And I know when I did my podcast with Liz, her husband edited it and I felt awful for him because he was a sound guy. So he was very...
Did he edit out your ums and stuff?
Oh, he did. Yes. But he would spend hours editing our podcast because we were so awful, I think. But no, like I think that it depends on what you're trying to get across. Some people, the style, like the Joe Rogan, it's totally unedited. Other people want a more edited type of podcast. And that's fine. I think it just depends on what you're doing. But that definitely is a time factor. Same with YouTube. I don't know how much time. I know for you, you have someone helping you edit now. But you initially started out doing it yourself because you wanted to sort of get the feel and the style of what you were creating. But you have like B-roll going in there and things popping in on the screen. And that definitely takes extra time.
I edited exactly one episode myself.
Oh, just then, one? I give you way too much credit.
Well, I did, and then I was like, okay, I don't think I can do this. Is what I said. But, you know, it depends what style of YouTube channel you're doing, right? I'm doing like a teaching style, and I feel like if I just got on and talked about... Actually, I do have a couple videos like that that have caught on, but for the most part, you need to keep people kind of interested in the video. So that means like jump cuts, B-roll, just random things kind of inserted just to make sure that people are still paying attention to the video. Because to be successful on YouTube, you have to make sure that they watch as much video as possible.
Right. And I think about the beauty bloggers or the beauty influencers who are doing YouTube. I mean, that's a lot of editing. There's a lot of lighting involved. Their content's amazing, but I think their post-production's probably pretty intensive just to get, you know, the outcome that they want, because they're doing a lot of like fast forward and cutting and different things like that. Same with like cooking videos. You know, the real popular thing right now is like you have eggs and then you like throw them and then they end up in the pan cracked. But like there's all this editing that makes it look like. Have you seen those?
No.
I know you don't watch a lot of food stuff.
No, I don't.
But the kind of the style now is the sort of the overhead shot videos where, you know, you drop something in the pan and it like in your hand it's one way, but then when it hits the pan, it's already chopped. You have a pepper and then you drop it.
Like a time lapse too, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot more editing involved in YouTube versus, you know, a podcast. Even if you're just editing out your ums and things like that, it's still probably an hour or so of your time to do that. Whereas YouTube, you could be talking about 8 to 10 hours.
Okay, so if we're comparing YouTube versus podcast, I'll just give you an idea. So my video editor, it probably takes her a good 2.5 days to edit like a 12-minute video.
So it's labor intensive.
It is. And whereas for a podcast, she can edit one of my podcasts, I want to say in just maybe one and a half times the length of the podcast.
Okay, and then let's compare that to blogging.
Yeah, so for blogging, it depends on the type of post that you write. I don't know actually how long it takes you to write a post, but for me, it's about 4 to 6 hours.
You're writing what, about 2,000 to 5,000 words?
Yes,
it's heavily researched.
Yes, it's at least 2,500. I wouldn't say it's heavily researched because it's just based on my own experiences. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
for me, when I'm doing like DIY or cooking posts, the actual writing of the post is not what takes me the time. It's the making of the recipe or trying the recipe, having it fail, having to make it 2 more times. Doing the photography. We were talking the other day. I have some printables on the site that are going to come out. I spent a good hour and a half just doing the photography for the printables. I think that's where the time spent might be look different depending on your topic, but I would say 4 to 6 hours is pretty reasonable for any sort of content, whether depending on whether you have to do something yourself or, you know, you're actually creating a recipe or a project versus just content teaching education type thing. That's, you know, half a day.
And in terms of the podcast, like it depends on the style of the podcast. Like for this podcast, for example, it's not that much time.
Right.
But I also have my other podcast where I do an interview-based one. And you basically have to cater to whoever you're interviewing's schedule.
Right.
And that can be kind of an ordeal there. So I guess of the three, which one would you say takes more time? I think if you don't have an editor for video, I think YouTube will probably take you the most time.
Yeah.
Followed by a blog, followed by a podcast.
Yeah. So if you're crunched for time, podcast is probably the best place to get started if you think your medium works for podcasting. And that's kind of leads us into the next point is where are you most comfortable? And I think this is really important because I know for us in the blogging course, we talk a lot about you have to do video because you and I have both seen how well it converts and how well it is for engagement, right? Like both of us have seen that wherever we're using video, we're seeing a lot of improvement. But at the same time, if you are not a video person, no amount of traffic studies will make you a video person, I think. I don't know.
See,
you might have a different opinion.
I don't believe that. I think anything can be worked on and you can become a video person.
But you and I have both seen videos from people like on YouTube where we're like, they're not video people.
Yeah, but anything can be trained. Like, we're not all born public speakers, right? And that's why people do Toastmasters and that sort of thing. It's the same thing. Video is like public speaking in a way.
Kind of.
So you're saying that if you're born not for video, it's game over?
Well, I mean, game over. So come to us. We will immediately judge you and decide, and decide if you're good for video.
No, Tony will judge you.
I will judge you. Here's the thing, though. Because so I didn't want to do a podcast for a long time because I hate the sound of my voice, right? And you and I have talked about
which
this.
Which is like, odd because it's so soothing.
It's absolutely not at all. It's very whiny. You and I both talk about Amy Porterfield, right? Her voice is like butter. It feels like you're getting tucked in with like a warm blanket. Like I don't have that voice. You don't have that voice. To me, like Amy Porterfield is perfect for podcasting because her voice just makes you feel happy when you listen to her. So for me, I had a hard time wanting to do a podcast because I'm like, oh, I hate listening to myself. I don't want to do it. And I think if you struggle with something like that, then doing that medium is going to be tough for you. And there's going to be a lot more to overcome than just the technical side or learning how to strategize on YouTube or podcast or blog or whatever.
Wait, so how did you get over this then? Because it's, I mean, there's audio and video too, right?
Because you're like, your voice still sucks. How did you get over it?
Well, you had added a little jab too. None of us, you said both of us don't have a voice for radio.
You have a much better, you have a much more.
Oh, it's too late now. It's comfort. Too late.
I know, too late, whatever. Yeah. Well, I think you realize that if you have good things to say or if you feel like your content is valuable enough, then you just kind of tell yourself to get over it and move on. Yeah, it still doesn't make it, I still don't like listening to it. That hasn't changed.
I mean, okay, I will say this, like for some reason, like I can go on this podcast and just talk endlessly, but for some reason, if someone's holding a camera and pointing it at me, sometimes I freeze up.
Oh, yes, you do.
I don't know what it is about the camera, but yeah.
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 But that's the thing. It's like, okay, so some people I just feel like are not cut out for video. And to me, it's like if you are trying to do video and you try it for 6 months or a year and you feel like you haven't made any progress, then maybe video is just not where you're comfortable. And I think that's okay. You might be amazing on a podcast. You might be able to convey. And here's the thing with video. You have to be high energy on video for it to, in my opinion, profitable is not the right word, for it to engage people. And if you're just a low energy personality, then the podcast, the soothingness of your voice, that type of thing might work much better for you. Because if you go on a video and your energy level is the same as it is just in your regular talking, it doesn't work. You have to get more amped. And that's just not for that's not for everybody.
No, I actually agree. So when I put out a YouTube video and when I'm recording it, it doesn't actually look like it on camera, but I'm actually talking louder and being more energetic.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like the camera just tones that down. So you have to like do extra. Whereas on the podcast, we're just talking normally right now.
Exactly. And I think there's a difference. And the same thing with blogging, right? Like maybe you suck at writing. You've never been a good writer. You hated English in high school. It's not your thing. Maybe you don't feel like you convey things well in the written form. And so maybe that you're the perfect person for YouTube. You just, and that's, we talked to this about with people too, that if you don't love writing, you can always dictate your blog posts. You can always talk through and have someone else transcribe them, or even you transcribe them after you've talked it out, because you just speak better than you write. And I think that's important, is wherever you're the most comfortable is where you should start, so that you can build up your confidence and then you can try the things that you feel uncomfortable in. For me with podcasting, I was super uncomfortable, but then I was like, well, I'm already doing these other things and I was already doing video. So it's kind of like, well, people already hear my voice. They haven't totally hated me yet. So what's there to lose by trying to do podcasts?
Yeah, for me, the reason why I chose a podcast, and I specifically chose an interview-based podcast, because it requires very little prep. Like literally, I can just wake up and then just talk to someone, regular conversation with zero prep, and have it still come out decent.
That doesn't surprise me about you at all, since I wrote all the notes for this.
I was about to say, like, I just woke up, like, I woke up at 6:30 this morning, out of bed. And
Podcast Plus, right there, you rolled out of bed and we're recording a podcast, before the sun rises where you are, because
that's true.
But you couldn't be doing a video right now.
I did not comb my hair or nothing. I literally rolled out of bed.
Yeah. So, I wanted
too
to say,
much
how
information
is that,
on this podcast.
How is that different than all the other times we record
stuff?
Because
we do videos also.
Yes,
right?
That's true. And you do comb your hair typically for those. But yeah, but that's the thing. I think if you're just getting started, there's always nerves or feelings of, most people feel like they have that imposter syndrome, or people aren't going to read what I'm doing or listen to me or anything like that. So I think if you start where you feel like you already have a little bit of an advantage, then you're more likely to have success because you already believe in yourself. And initially, I mean, with starting anything, you can talk about this with YouTube. It's a slog. When we both started our blogs, no one read them. You know, we were doing all the tactics back in the 2008, 2009, commenting on their blog posts, trying to get guest posts, doing all those things. Nowadays, it's a little bit different, but you know, we were doing all these things to get readers. Same thing today. Like, you started your YouTube channel several months ago. It's still a slog to get, you know, subscribers and people watching your videos. And you're still testing and experimenting with the things that you're doing to see what works best.
To be honest with you, I think all three platforms are going to be a slog, right?
Yeah.
There's no way to avoid it. I guess, and maybe this is a segue into our next topic, is which platform will move the needle faster for you in terms of building an audience?
I'm really interested to see what you think.
It just depends, right? So the reason why I blog is not... Okay, so most people probably don't know this about me, but I actually don't like writing at all. I literally every week force myself to write 2,500 or 3,000 words in a post. And the reason I do that is because Google is so powerful. And if you write the right post and you target the right keywords, you can get free traffic in the long term. And that's why I do it. Podcasting, on the other hand, is probably the worst medium to get discovered on, because right now there aren't really that many discovery mechanisms for podcasts, right? There's pretty much like iTunes, maybe there's Spotify, but you know, there's no like really good search engine for podcasts right now. So I would say podcasting is the worst. And then YouTube is, I want to say, up there with blogging, I guess.
So do you think that, because you have the My Wife Quit Her Job podcast, and mm-hmm. that's pretty popular. Do you think it got popular because you already had the popular website, or do you think it was a combination? Obviously, you've been doing it a long time now, so that makes a difference as well.
Yeah, so I think the way it works is I launched with an audience already. Mm-hmm. And I think what ended up happening was when I launched that audience, they became super fans once they listened to the podcast, right? Because they're listening to you for so long. And then what ends up happening is podcasts tend to grow via word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And once you have somebody, they tend to stick with you. And so I would say podcasts probably have a better retention, certainly better retention than blog for sure, right? Mm-hmm. Most people, they come to find a blog post and they read it and then they leave. And sometimes they don't even remember which site they read it from, right?
Right.
Whereas podcasts, that will never happen.
It's funny that you say that, because I'm just thinking through my own personal experience, but whenever I go on a road trip, you know this, I post on Facebook, tell me your favorite podcasts, right? Or I always ask that question because I want something to listen to. And it's funny because I've gone on iTunes and searched for specific topics that I was interested in learning more about, and the search results are crappy. Half the time it is nothing related to what I'm talking about, or maybe it's like some weird side relation, but the podcast itself isn't actually about whatever that thing is. But when I post it on Facebook and all my friends start commenting, like if I say, hey, I want true crime podcasts, I mean, I'll get 50 different true crime podcasts, plus a write-up, right? Because these people are super loyal to the podcast. But when I think about all the podcasts that I've listened to and I've loved, they've all come from a friend. They've never come from me searching on iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Whereas like on YouTube, like I do searches there all the time,
right? I know, because I'm logged into your account.
You are. All of a sudden, I'm getting DIY.
I know you're getting DIY. Best man speeches. I know, it's terrible. No, but I totally agree with you. Like for me, I don't ever ask for a YouTube recommendation. I always just find it on my own through search.
Plus, YouTube has a really great recommendation engine.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That just sucks you in though, right?
It does. So, yeah. So in that respect, I guess those are Google properties. So blogging and, you know, I would argue that YouTube has a better discovery mechanism than blogging, right?
Yeah.
Because unless you have things implemented in your blog, like related posts, or, you know, you're doing a really good job of interlinking your other articles, YouTube just has this tendency to show you just the right video after you're done watching the current video. And then you end up staying on the platform for an hour.
Well, and as a creator on YouTube, your chance of being discovered when they're on someone else's content is pretty high, right? Because you might have your own playlist coming up too, but like in that sidebar or another place, it's going to show you videos from other people. So maybe someone's on a different video, not yours, and then they still might find you. Whereas if they're on someone else's blog, they're never going to find you.
I mean, there are literally people on YouTube who they do a search. They find the highest ranking or the most views of a video, and they just copy the title verbatim and all the keywords. And there's a chance when you do that, that you'll show up under the recommended because it's the exact same topic.
That seems sketchy though.
People do it and it works. I mean, I wouldn't say it's sketchy because they're not copying the video. You know, it's
that's true. They're just copying the title. They're not copying the content.
And a completely new thumbnail also, obviously.
But I would say just like sort of to wrap up this little section, blogging and probably YouTube is pretty good for discovery, right? So search, Pinterest search, even, I mean, the social media stuff sort of can be driven. You can drive anybody to anywhere from social media. But I think for search and discovery, like podcasting is definitely not the way to go. However, I think YouTube and podcasting is such a better way to connect with people.
I agree.
Podcasting, because people tend to be very loyal, right? They stay with you a long time. And then for YouTube, I think there's that whole factor where they're seeing your face and your voice typically on a YouTube video. Not always. Some people don't put their face in the YouTube videos. But I think when people can see you and hear you, they just become, either they really like you or they don't at that point.
Yeah, totally. I think podcasts have the greatest effect on creating superfans because it's just time, right? I mean, if someone's willing to listen to you for 45 minutes or an hour, that creates a much larger connection than a YouTube video that might be like 10 minutes.
And I think YouTube, for me, like when I think about the YouTube creators that I watch, like I'm watching them because it's a combination of the two, right? They're good content plus I connect with them. Mm-hmm. So I think there's the combination. But I definitely, like the podcast is for sure like that long-term super fan. And I've seen this with you. You know, we've been in, you know, at a conference somewhere walking down the street and people have come up to you and said, are you Steve Chu from My Wife Quit Her Job? And we're like not even at the conference. We're on the road and people will come up to you. So I think it kind of shows the power of the super fans that a podcast can
create. That's when you usually roll your eyes and go, oh my God.
It is. It's absolutely. Yeah. You find me on the ground just throwing a temper tantrum. Yes, he's My Wife Quit Her Job. Oh my God. Yeah, that's me. But I think it just shows the power. And we've seen it happen to other people. I mean, Pat Flynn's kind of big on all the channels. But
Pat always has this like trail of people following everywhere. I know. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you remember this because you were like in a little pack ahead of us walking. But we were in downtown Charlotte and this couple came up to Pat Flynn who knew he was going to be in Charlotte speaking and literally drove to Charlotte just so that they could possibly see him outside the hotel.
Okay. Well, like, that's crazy. Yeah.
Well... He was very gracious, took a picture with him. I was like, you're getting stalked. Get down. anyway, but yeah. But I think that shows the power of just the connection people have with you. Like this couple seemed like a very nice couple, but they felt like they could just come there and try to meet him because they felt such a connection to him. And not like in a Hannibal Lecter
way. I'm trying to think of like a nice way to say that, but yeah.
But like just like people coming up to you, like they feel like they can come up to you. And it's funny too, because when they come up to you, they already know you.
Well, yeah, so this was the odd thing. One time someone came up to me, and I had this blog post where it's 25 things you don't know about me. And they knew all 25 things, and they started asking me questions about that. And I was like, whoa, what's going on? Because I forgot I had written that post. I'm like, how did you know that? Like,
how did you know I took piano lessons? Stop.
How did you know I took the SATs? Yeah.
I know. Oh, my gosh. But no, I think that that's definitely – a connection point for people when they've heard your voice, when they've seen your face. It just, blogging can be very anonymous if you want it to be. And I think it's much harder to be anonymous on a podcast or YouTube. I don't think you really
can. It's impossible. Yeah. It's basically impossible.
But I mean, I think you could on YouTube if you never showed your face and you use like weird voiceover stuff, but I wouldn't think that would be super effective.
I don't think I watch videos. I don't think I've seen a video like that per se, but maybe
I have. Okay. It's like the AI, right? They're like, this is how you install Shopify. Like, and it's like someone reading.
Oh yeah, that's like, true. That's true. Like Siri or something like that. Yeah.
Not really engaging, but okay. Finally, let's wrap it up with this, making money, because that's what most people care about.
Well, hold on. Sorry. No, we can do making money. What I was going to say kind of falls under that realm, right? sorry, I'll let you finish the topic.
No, no. Well, we can backtrack. Well, I think that's the question we get asked the most often is, how long till I make money? When am I going to make money? How do I make money? And so we can talk about a little bit about the different ways you can make money on each platform and which one has the potential to be the most lucrative, which I think the answer is one of those, our favorite. It depends, but we'll talk about that as well.
So here's what the problem I see with YouTube. It's very hard to get someone off of YouTube to, for example, sign up for your email list. And if you're just relying on YouTube ad revenue, like AdSense revenue, essentially, I think it's pretty hard to make like a full-time income unless you got a ton of views.
You have to have really, like, you got to be like PewDiePie, right? Or one of those.
It depends on the type of content. Like if you're doing like vlog content, then it can be like $2 or $3 per thousand views. If you're doing business, it can be like up to 20, and that's kind of like the realm I am. So I technically need less traffic, but you still need a good amount of traffic to make a good living, I would say, if you're just relying on that.
Right. So what other ways would you say people could monetize a YouTube channel?
I mean, there's calls to action where you can have them sign up for a list or drive them to your website. But here's the other thing, right? YouTube frowns on that, right? If you're driving too much traffic off of YouTube, that actually makes the visibility of your videos less. So it's kind of like this trade-off, right? You don't want to do it too much, but maybe occasionally when you have a video with like a good call to action to your website, then perhaps you can get their information.
And I think it's important too to remember that when you look at these huge YouTube creators, right? Because there are some people that are just gigantic on YouTube. And they're doing merch, or they have a course, or they, you know, they have all these different things. But their traffic on YouTube, the level that they have, is sort of that 1% of the 1% of the 1%.
Yeah.
That's not a normal, like if you're talking about a normal average type creator who maybe they're getting, I don't know, what do you have, like 20,000 subscribers, something like that?
Not quite yet, but getting close, yeah.
Yeah, so a good-sized creator, like you're not going to make a living off of ad revenue. You're going to have to find other ways to do that.
Right. I mean, the reason why I have my YouTube channel, to be honest with you, is for more discovery. And it's kind of like a good hybrid between blogging and podcasts.
Right.
And yeah, I do drive people back to, you know, the free mini course that I offer.
And I think, too, like with all the platforms, obviously the ad revenue on YouTube is one way to make money, but you do have to be always thinking about what's your next step. Do you want to launch your popular, you want to take your popularity on YouTube and use it to launch a book or a course or, you know, some sort of membership? Are you using it to sell merch or a product? You know, I think about some of the big DIYers, some of them end up coming out with their own types of paint or brushes or tools, right? Mm-hmm. Like they, or they get real big sponsorships, right? So that's the other way you can make money on YouTube, is sort of that brand ambassador paid content type thing, where I know you don't do this, and it wouldn't be make sense for you, but a lot of times they'll get paid to actually make the video, right? And then that's totally dependent on the amount of views and subscribers you have on your channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously AdSense revenue is probably the least lucrative of all the different methods. I guess the only problem I see with YouTube really is that you don't control your audience per se. Like to get their information, you have to drive them somewhere else.
Right.
And they're basically owned by Google, essentially.
But I think it is really good to sort of, and this is for if you're starting YouTube later on, maybe you already have content or podcasts, it's sort of that other leg. So for you, it just gives you more authority in the space. It's another way for people to find you. Yeah, you're going to make a little money off ads. But it's for you, it's more about just another way to connect with people and continue to build sort of the online dominance that you've built to this day.
I mean, for me at least, and I think you too, right? I mean, the blog is like the primary platform.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I consider myself a blogger first, because I get most of my leads just from the articles that I get and the traffic that I get there.
Okay. So what about your podcast? I know for you, do you do ads in the middle still? I know you used to do that.
I do a pre-roll, post-roll, and a mid-roll.
And for you, I don't think the podcast, when you started it, your thought was I'm going to make money from selling ads on my podcast. For you, it was more of a lead gen.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. In fact, it made negative dollars for a long time.
I didn't think you were capable of making negative dollars.
Well, okay. You know, like the hosting's really cheap. Actually, it's really cheap, right?
Yeah.
To host the podcast.
So. You're like, you weren't making $60 a month? Come on. So, but if you want to monetize a podcast, there's obviously you can sell ads.
I don't know.
I have no idea how lucrative that is.
I can't remember what the going rate is. I charge more, obviously, because it's a very niche-focused podcast, like specifically focused on e-commerce. It's not like a general Gab type of podcast.
Right.
I think the going rate on average is something like $42
per thousand subscribers or downloads,
I think.
Okay. For you, with the... I mean, like, when did you think, like, okay, I can start selling ads? How many downloads did you have, or how many downloads were you averaging?
You know, to be honest with you, I was never going to start selling ads.
Okay.
In the beginning. Because that's not what the purpose was. The purpose was to create super fans and then have them eventually sign up for the course or whatnot.
And you still do call to actions inside the podcast for your course.
I do, to my free 6-day mini course, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is basically the way you get people into your course.
Correct. And I'm trying to remember who my first sponsor was, but they basically asked me, and they asked me to give them a number. And this is before I even knew like how much to charge. And yeah. I gave them a number and they said yes right away. I was like, that means
that's the worst. That's the worst feeling.
But the thing is, I thought that it was a high number at the time. I just didn't realize.
You know,
I didn't talk to anyone. I was just like, okay, well, I'll do it for this. And then, it was like a 3-month contract, and they re-upped for a little bit, and I didn't raise the price on them for as long as they wanted to stay on. And so, yeah.
So they're still paying $5 a week to be on your podcast. But I think that's important too. And there's like Facebook groups if you have a podcast, and they have, I know there's Facebook groups based on the type of podcast you have. Like there's a female podcast group that I'm in, and I know there's other ones. I mean, Facebook has a group for everything, but that's a good place to ask those questions of, you know, people that are probably talking about similar things that you are, like, hey, what are you charging? Mm-hmm. And that way you don't have that feeling of, oh, I should have doubled whatever I asked for initially. Although, I mean, I also feel like if you feel like that was fair, then it was fair.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was willing to do it for. So I don't know, like when it comes to just podcasting money-wise,
yeah,
I want to say it's probably one of the, it's not going to be as lucrative as the other two.
Right. Do you, because you know a lot of podcasters, do you know any podcaster that makes their like primary income off the podcast?
Yeah. Well, Jordan Harbinger and John Lee Dumas.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jordan makes all of his money off of the podcast, actually.
I thought he had a course. He not did, anymore?
Well, no. He split off from Art of Charm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's right.
And then John Lee Dumas, like he makes an insane amount in sponsorship.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about like the 0.1%.
Doesn't he have the top podcast though? Like, or one of the top podcasts out there?
No, he's definitely up there for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's obviously podcasts that are bigger. I mean, Tim, I'm sure, makes a ton off of sponsorships. I can't remember because I once talked to someone who advertised on his podcast, and it was some insane 5-figure sum per episode.
But, I mean, he's clearly worth that to people, right?
Yes.
Like, he's clearly going to drive the traffic. And that's the other thing to think about, too, when you're pricing out anything with the ad, sort of the ad or sponsorship type thing, is you have to prove yourself too. I know for you, you've done a really good job of, if you recommend, because you don't recommend everybody.
Nope.
Right? There's people out there that will recommend anything. And you usually have this whole process where, and we do this with Seller Summit, right? Where we have to try the product, we have to like the product, we have to like the people associated with the product before we let them come to Seller Summit.
I have to like the product, you have to like the people.
I have to like the people, you have to like the product. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. That's very true. But like there's a whole vetting process. But on the opposite side of that, we have numbers and facts to back it up that if we talk about you at Seller Summit, you're going to get signups. And we've heard from numerous sponsors at Seller Summit that it's the most profitable event they've ever been to. They've had the most signups because we're super selective. And I'm sure the same thing with your podcast. If you're going to talk about Klaviyo on your podcast, it's because you use Klaviyo, you love Klaviyo, you can show that it drives this much revenue to the Bumblebee Linens. And so people trust that. So they're going to be more likely to sign up for it versus if you were promoting Klaviyo 1 week, AWeber the next, MailChimp, clearly you're going to promote them all day long. You know, you would have much less trust with your audience if you were just promoting every email provider under the sun, which you don't do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, actually, I usually quote numbers. Like I'll do a case study. I'll do a blog post also. So,
but I think that if you're just, you know, if you're starting out and you're creating the content, you want to be able to do those sorts of things so that your audience trusts you and that the advertiser trusts you too, so that you can say, hey, if you want to sponsor me, I am going to send this much traffic to your website or give you, you know, around this many conversions. I'm sure you have like those numbers, but that's actually pretty important because I know I've seen advertisers where they, you know, pay money for something and then they're super disappointed because they didn't get the traffic they thought or they didn't get the conversions they thought. And so you want to make sure that it's a win for them as well.
You have a lot of experience with that actually, right? With your other company. Yeah.
I've dealt with a lot of disgruntled advertisers.
Not for a lot of happy stuff, obviously, but no. Yeah.
But that's a risk. Like when I used to work with the brands and I would connect them with bloggers, it was always a risk when you worked with a blogger. If they couldn't show you right off the bat what they could send, you always were like crossing your fingers. Like, I hope this works out. I mean, you do your best, right? But at the end of the day, you just never know until it goes live what it's going to do.
So personally, I think the most revenue potential will lie with your blog because you can get their information. you know, I've had students in my class, you know, with a very small list of less than 100 people start making, you know, thousands of dollars. Because you have that ability to send them to whatever offer that you want and get them coming back.
Well, I think that's the really important thing with the blog is that you have the ability to capture their email in a variety of different ways on the blog. You don't have that in a podcast and YouTube. You can still capture their email. It's just significantly harder.
Yeah.
And on the blog, I mean, we have that email lesson where you showed the 82 different ways you get people's email address on one post where it's like, yeah. And then I do it here and I do it here and I do it here. But it's like if people haven't signed up for their email. Sign up for your email after that. They just don't want to because there's no reason because you've given them so many different opportunities. And I think that's really important that you're able to get people's email and then get them coming back either through sending them email or, you know, even things like retargeting them on Facebook, right? We talk about that with Facebook ads. You're able to retarget people that land on certain pages or that don't finish their cart, right, with Bumblebee Linens and that sort of thing. You don't have that ability on a podcast or on YouTube.
Yeah. So, I mean, how would you rank all these now? I mean, let's wrap this up.
How would I rank them in regards to what? Ease?
In terms of if you're starting out, if you were to start out right now, and obviously your goal is to make money, which medium would you start with?
You know, if I was to start again right now, I would probably start a YouTube channel.
Really? Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I would. Because I feel like there's still a lot of opportunity. Like, I think there's opportunity in all of them, but I feel like YouTube probably, in the niches that I can talk about, probably there's a little bit more opportunity.
Oh, yes. For sure.
So that's why I would pick that. And I think YouTube to me is easier. Like I'm tech challenged. So if I had to start over and like build a blog from scratch, that would be very frustrating to me. It's not frustrating me to turn on a camera. But that's my personality, right? Like I'm mm-hmm. very comfortable on video. It doesn't bother me to do video. That's not everybody. I think my second choice would definitely be blogging. I would not start a podcast right away, mainly because I hate my voice, but two, because I think that it is tough if you don't have an audience to launch a podcast. You have to have something, or you don't have a really large network or something like that. I think podcast is probably the toughest to get started in regards to like popularity, not like actual toughness to get it started.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what I would do today. I still think that I would do, maybe a blog is a strong term, but if I were to go YouTube, I would definitely have a site to go along with it.
Yeah.
I would probably, you know, this is actually something we haven't really touched on, but a lot of people out there, what they do is they create one piece of content and they essentially reuse that piece of content for both a YouTube channel, a blog post, and a podcast.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we kind of do that already.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're, yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't really have to, it's not 3x the work is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So right now, like I'll take a blog post and I'll turn that into a YouTube video as well as a podcast and it's much less effort. So I would say then that you go with what you're comfortable with and you take that piece of content on whatever medium that you have and then you can massage that into the other ones. And for discovery, I would just be focusing on YouTube and blogging.
I think if you were to start over, you'd still start over blogging for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though
that's
I hate
totally
writing,
your personality.
Which is ironic. Yeah. That's true. That's true.
But you hate writing, but you love the strategy behind it.
Yeah. I mean,
like
I
you
like
love
traffic.
The research
yeah.
and yeah, you're like, I like money. Of course I do. No, but you like the research and figuring out like what keywords to go for and all that. Like you actually enjoy that.
I mean, I do that for YouTube too. So
yeah, and I don't love that. Like, I just let me be creative. Let me spray paint something, and then people will just love it. You know, that's kind of. I mean, I do all the research too, but I don't enjoy that part, and I don't want it to have
actually,
to change what I'm doing.
I don't enjoy that part either, to be honest with you, because it sometimes affects what you write about. Like this happens on YouTube all the time, right? You get a video that hits big, and then that kind of forces you to put more content out around that same topic, right? To
that you don't like?
To ride the
or that you're not a fan of?
It's not that you're not a fan of, but it's not like what you were originally planning on talking about, you know?
Gotcha. So you're going to get the I love Ahrefs tattoo removed from your arm? Is that?
Well, so here's an example. And this is actually just some advice I'd gotten recently. So someone looked at my channel and said, wow, this video got a lot of traction. You should make 5 more just like that. And I was like, I don't want to make 5 more videos like that. And he's like, well, okay, yeah, well, it's a trade-off, right? Because you have momentum on that topic. Google loves you for that topic. And so you should put out more material. And clearly your viewership wants more of that topic, right? So the question
is, can you tell me what it was about?
It was about wholesale sourcing.
Oh, is that why you put out the wholesale clothing video?
It is. It is why.
Because when I saw that, I was like, why the heck is Steve talking about wholesale clothing?
So I listened to his advice, and when I released that video, it ended up being like the number three in like for the past 10 videos. So clearly, okay. You know, that's the content that Google wants, you know, me to create. So it's a trade-off, right? I don't want to be just talking about that. So I think I'm going to go back to my old ways and just talk about what happens to be on my mind at the moment.
That's tough, though, because I think there's not much difference in blogging. I had a post a couple years ago on Amazon Prime, which is like an amazing term to be able to rank for, because there's a bounty to get people to sign up for the 30-day trial. That's decent in the deal, like frugal blogger world. It's not good in the personal finance world. But then I was like, well, I need to write more content on Amazon Prime. What else can I talk about with Amazon Prime? And I wrote this article because it was something that I did care about, but then the rest of the stuff I don't care about at all. But I ended up writing two more articles about how to cancel Amazon Prime and something else because I was like, well, this is doing well. And they all did well, but it's the same thing. You end up writing that just because you know it's going to rank, whereas I didn't really like, get me back to make some more cinnamon rolls, right? Like that's just not.
Yeah.
but it's a yeah. trade-off, right? Because I know like the cinnamon roll post isn't going to make me a lot of money right away. You know, that's based on traffic and ads and, you know, affiliates through Amazon that don't pay a ton. Whereas I know if I can get more signups for Amazon Prime, that's going to make me a lot more money.
That's true. Whereas podcasts, you know, because it's not really a good discovery engine, you can literally just talk about anything for a long period of time, even whatever you want.
For hours and hours and hours until people stop listening. So, all right. So to wrap it up, I would say my number one piece of advice is to do what you feel the most comfortable with first, because you want to remove as many barriers to success as possible. So that would be my best piece of advice when you're just getting started, is start where you feel the most comfortable so that you have the greatest chance of success.
I mean, my advice is even simpler than that. Just do anything. Yeah, really,
just do something.
Do anything, and then just make sure you can keep it up for the long term. Just pick a frequency that you can manage. So for me, that's once a week across all three. I don't think I can do more, so I don't even try, because if I did so, I'd just probably burn myself out.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.